I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 9:09, and we're going to talk about vacations, and I would love to hear from you all on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, and I'll read some of your texts at 504-260-1870. Don't ever text and drive. Please don't ever text and drive, and if you do, I'm going to send Tim out there. Tim's going to come get you, so be aware of that. We're talking about vacation. Do you feel guilty about taking time off of work? Do you use all your days off? Nearly half of Americans don't take all the vacation days, and many of us feel vacation guilt. I don't really feel vacation guilt. I have a love-hate thing with vacation where, well, first of all, I love my job, and I'm very blessed. You all know that. I love being here. But I hate the end of vacations. I like the idea of going on vacations, but the idea of, okay, it's Friday, vacation's over, get ready to come back, get back in a groove of going to work. That part I don't like so much. So as a result of that, sometimes I just avoid vacation. Joining us now is Dr. Karen Tan. She's an assistant professor of the Tourism and Hospitality Management Program at Middle Tennessee State University. Prior to earning her PhD in Tourism Management from Temple University in Philadelphia, she accumulated close to a decade of industry experience as a tourism and hospitality consultant by working on numerous projects in over 20 countries across Asia Pacific and the Americas. Her rich industry experience now serves as inspiration for her research on tourist well-being. And for that, and with that, rather, we welcome in Dr. Karen. Is it Tan or Tan?
It's Tan.
Dr. Karen Tan. How are you? Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, Tommy. Thank you for having me. I'm very well. I just came back from a vacation, and I absolutely feel no guilt about that.
May I ask where you went? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I went back to Singapore to visit family, and I had an excellent time enjoying the hot weather there and great food as well.
Well, you went hot weather. You didn't have to go to Singapore. You could have come here. And you could have gotten some great food as well. Have you been to New Orleans, Dr. Tan?
Not yet. It's on my bucket list of places to visit, though. Well, I hear that the food there is just awesome.
It is. You come down, we'll see to it that you get a great meal. I promise you that. Let's talk about What do you study when it comes to vacation, and what has your research shown as it relates to people taking vacation? Do they feel guilty about it? Are they afraid of their jobs? Do they feel like they're letting their fellow workers down? Take all of that and jump in where you feel comfortable.
Yeah, sure. Well, as you mentioned earlier, I have worked in so many different countries around the world, and when I first moved over to America, I was surprised that, you know, so many American colleagues actually feel guilty about going on vacation. So that pushed me to kind of like look deeper into the issue here. And this particular piece of research that I did on vacation guilt in America actually showed me that 1 in 5 employees in America who attempt to take PTO for vacations, they end up experiencing vacation guilt. Now, vacation guilt is when an individual wants to go on a vacation, but, you know, he or she ends up feeling bad, anxious, guilty, incompetent, or uncertain for wanting to do so. Feeling this way about vacations is unusual in that, you know, taking a vacation is not generally viewed as a bad or awful behavior, unlike, say, telling a lie. After all, going on vacations benefit individuals like you and I on so many different levels, right? Ranging from health to wellness restoration to having the opportunity to learn new things. And my study found that, you know, this employees who experience vacation guilt, they feel this way because their co-workers and or their bosses make them feel like that. Their co-workers, their bosses actually make them feel that vacation taking violates how an ideal employee should behave. To such co-workers and bosses, an ideal employee should always be around for the company, should always be physically present. And now that does not necessarily equate to doing more work. They just need to be physically present to signal their commitment, to signal their dedication to the company. And individuals who are not present, you know, by so-called quote-unquote disappearing on a vacation, they are essentially perceived by their co-workers as not pulling their weight or are not serious about their work. So they end up feeling guilty about going on vacations.
So not necessarily it's about what they do, but just being there, even if they're not doing anything, just hanging around, kind of like our producers here. I'm just kidding.
Oops.
I'm just playing. No, I'm just teasing. They do a tremendous job, and they all know that. I'm just playing. No, but is it but those people that are feeding that guilt, do they take vacation themselves?
Both yes and no. Well, for people, for some individuals who may actually be concerned about job security, they may actually choose to not go on vacations, right? They may, some of them actually feel threatened enough that, you know, if they come back, there won't be a job for them anymore. So they choose to not go on vacations. And in the same study that I did, some of my interviewees told me that, yeah, they still, you know, bit the bullet. They still chose to go on vacation.
No, wait, now just listen to what you just said. Bit the bullet and chose to go on vacation as though it's an unpleasant thing, right?
It is, because to them it is, because they end up, they feel that they end up being penalized for that. These interviewees, they feel that when at the end of the day, you know, come annual evaluation, performance evaluation and all that, they feel that their overall performance is actually underrated because they disappeared for their vacations. They feel that they have been passed up for promotions because they were not dedicated enough to give up their vacations for their company.
When it comes to the importance of vacation, there have been numerous studies that show you got to, what is it, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy, right? That goes back a thousand years, but that's the fact, right?
It is a fact. There's a very established stream of research showing all the positive benefits of going on vacation. I mean, you feel good when you're on vacation, right? And of course, you may feel disappointed when your vacation ends, as do, you know, just like, you know, you feel disappointed when anything good, anything pleasant comes to an end, you feel disappointed. But at the end of the day, you will still go back to work feeling restored, feeling like, you know, refreshed, feeling that you have more creative, more creativity. You feel that you can, you know, run further and all of that. And in fact, you know, studies have also shown that by going on vacation, you learn new things. You are exposed to new ideas, new culture, new experiences, and all this benefit you as an individual, as an employee as well.
Is this a uniquely American thing?
Well, not quite. It is not uniquely an American thing. There are some countries that experience it more than America, and in fact, Japan is probably the country in the world where vacation guilt is the most prevalent. In Japan, not utilizing paid vacation leave is traditionally seen as an unwritten rule to signal serious commitment to a company. I mean, in their culture, you know, being physically present at work signals commitment, which is also partly why it is normal for them to clock 60 to 70 hours a week at work, even if there is no overtime pay.
When it comes to the time that people take off, well, let me take a step back first. Let me try to put this against some kind of baseline or timeline. Is this a relatively new trend? Did people embrace their vacations in the, I don't know, the 60s, the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and now all of a sudden it's not that way? Or what? Or do you know, Doctor?
Well, it is not quite a new trend, but it is a trend that seems to be pretty insidious, as in it's a trend that's taking many years to actually surface. Why do I say that? It's because when I look at the amount of paid time off that's actually being given to American employees, over the last 20 years, the amount of PTO has actually been given has actually increased. But at the same time, the amount of paid time off being used by employees has actually decreased. So it's a slow, these two trends are happening over a very long period of time of say about 20 years. And it is something that is not, it that doesn't happen overnight.
I don't, I get 20 days of vacation a year, I think is the way it works. I don't know if they've changed it. I don't quite understand because I don't take it. But because before I got into radio, one of the things I would hate is that when I would turn the radio on, the person that I wanted to listen to wasn't there. And I made up my mind. I understand.
Yeah.
I'm not slapping myself on the back. I'm not. Maybe people hate it. Maybe people wish I took more vacation. But that's why I don't take a lot of vacation. I may take a couple of days coming up here for some dental work. Well, anyway, that's not the point. But the point is, I love working, and I don't mind taking, and I don't want to take vacation. But what would your advice? Go ahead.
Tommy, you feel. Because that's because you love your job. You love what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of the individuals out there who cannot or who have PTO but cannot take it for vacations, it's not because they love their job. It's because they are made to feel bad for going on vacations. Their companies, their organizations make them feel bad about it. It's not because they love their job. It's two different things altogether to me.
Somebody texted in and said, my boss tries everything they can to deny vacation time. Then if they can't, they try to talk you out of taking it or putting you on a guilt trip. And look, the cynical part of me, the business part of me says, you know, I can fully understand this where, hey, look, here you go. Congratulations. I'm going to give you 20 days of paid vacation. That sounds great. Until you try to use it, then I'm going to make you feel like a leper or a deserter or Benedict Arnold. Right.
That's exactly what my study reflected as well. So many of my interviewees, so many of my respondents, they are given paid time off. But being given that paid time off is different from having the opportunity to use it.
So what is the trend here moving forward? Do people start taking less vacation? You can only squeeze so much stuff. I'm no Karen Tan, okay? I'm no PhD, but I can tell you this. You can only squeeze so much stuff into a pipe until it breaks. And along those lines, it would seem like we're squeezing stuff into a pipe here, and eventually it's going to break. Thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely agree with you. I think that actually what we are seeing in America right now is the beginning roots of more harmful workplace norms, which could obviously impact healthcare problems and costs. I mean, if we take a leaf out of the book of Japan, you know, I'm not saying that we are America is like Japan right now, but it is starting to become like Japan. And we know that the workplace health, workplace norms in Japan is not something that, you know, we want to mimic or we want to work towards. So if, in any case, in America, if we don't want to go down the route of Japan, I think a lot of actions have to be taken to encourage companies and encourage organizations to provide the culture to encourage employees to go on vacations. It's not just about giving them those few days of PTO.
All right, let me take a break. We're going to pick it up here. We come back. I want to hear from y'all on the Oakman Art Jeweler Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. No texting and driving, or Tim will come after you. But do you take the amount of vacation that you have? If not, why not? Do you wish you had more? Is it a money thing? People are texting saying that they can't.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can afford to go on vacation, but you can always just take some time off and get some stuff done around the house. Although painting your house, you wouldn't think would be a vacation. However, it can, I guess, give you some mental stress and you get something done, and at least you're not doing the same stuff you do at work. Karen Tan is our guest. She's an assistant professor at the Department of Health and Human Performance, Middle Tennessee State University, and we're talking about vacation guilt. Tommy Tucker, glad you're with us. Back in a flash, WWL. All right, 9:29. We're talking to Dr. Karen Tan, assistant professor at the Department of Health and Human Performance, Middle Tennessee State University, about vacation guilt. Some of the texts that are coming in. My boss, I think if you're going to take a vacation, you should be conscious about getting ahead of your work. I wouldn't want my work to fall on someone else if I can help it. Some people have no issue with passing on the work. Somebody else texted and said, it's funny, though, and this is what we were talking about, Professor. It's funny, though, when they're recruiting you, they brag about how much PTO you get. Then once you get hired, they ridicule you for wanting to use it. Somebody else wants to know, you can't even get this younger generation to work, vacation, give me a break. And I would add to that, get out of my yard while you're at it. Somebody else says, I'm always afraid of what my boss will have to do while I'm away. Somebody else said that they're concerned with somebody messing up their job and going through their personal stuff because they have a way of doing things and they don't want it undone. Is that some of the stuff you heard in your survey as well?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they pretty much mirror what my study uncovered.
So when somebody else texted in and said, please ask her what the bosses have to say about this, the bosses being a generic term, of course, but does pressure come from up top on this, or is this an unwritten kind of thing, or is it, I would guess it happens where top management does it subtly with the next level of management, and then it filters down. Accurate or not?
Yes, pretty much that way. And a lot of times, I shouldn't say a lot of times, but sometimes it's not even top down. Sometimes it's just middle management level employees who feel the need to prove themselves. So they put the pressure on the people that they are supervising, even though there is no such pressure from the guys right on top.
Have you talked about vacation remorse at all, where people take a vacation and while they're taking it, they feel fine, but then when they get back, they're sorry they did?
Oh, that's something new to me. No, it could be my next research piece, Tommy.
Well, please feel free to use it and, mention me, if you could, in a footnote or something like that, because I don't think I've ever been footnoted. So for people that are listening, I know you can't give people personal advice or not, but how do you balance, or from the results of your survey, how do you balance the importance of taking vacation and rejuvenating and unplugging and refreshing and recharging and all of that with the balance of you gotta work, you gotta keep your job, and all of the other concerns?
Well, that is a very difficult question or situation to advise on, mm-hmm. because a lot of it is very personal, right? Like what you mentioned, do you want your job, mm-hmm. or do you want to be employed still, or do you want to, just be on permanent vacation? So a lot of it is, I think, may not necessarily come from the individual, but more so perhaps society in general needs to change their perspective or be more supportive of vacation taking. And in fact, in America, I think that it would be helpful if legislation is implemented to guarantee employees a minimum number of days of paid time off every year. I mean, when we look at all the information from advanced societies around the world, America right now is the only advanced economy that does not have such legislation in place. All advanced societies have some sort of minimum legislation to protect employees' rights. So that could be one step that America takes at this point in time to help change the culture around vacation taking.
I'm getting a lot of text on this, and to put them all together, the word would be insidious, I think, where they think they have mm-hmm. this insidious effect of taking vacation where, okay, go ahead and take your vacation time. You get your 20 days, take them all. However, deep down, you're on, quotation marks, the list. And we know who we can count on and who we can't count on. Is that a fact of life, or are people making stuff up in their heads?
No, that is what my study actually reflects as well. And I think that this feelings or these perceptions, they are not as evident in countries where, such as Europe, where vacation taking is the norm, where employees do not feel guilty or feel much less guilt about going on vacations, because they know that they are protected by legislation if they do, you know, go on vacations.
You know, somebody texted in and said, and I think this is part of this as well, that they're in a situation where their department has been downsized and downsized. Now they're doing the work of five people for the same money, but they're in a tough spot because they're happy that they still have their job, even though they're doing the work of five people for the same money, but at least they still have a job. Is that the trend in America?
Yes and no. It depends on, at least based on my study, it depends pretty much on the phase of life you are in. I see a lot of that amongst employees who are in the more initial stages of their career and who actually feel the greater desire to want to demonstrate more commitment, more time at work to their company. So they choose to put up with more work at the same amount of pay, or they choose to sacrifice their PTO for vacations, and just so that because they choose to use that as a means of getting ahead at work.
I know you've studied this in other countries. What about Germany? Have you looked at Germany?
Well, not yet. It is on my list of things to do.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering how they handled it there, because, you know, Norm Macdonald, the late comedian, said that Germany is a medium-sized country in Europe, and for the most part, they took on the world twice and almost won. So they seem to know what they're doing there, and it's true, really, if you think about it. So, for what countries are the most vacation friendly, at least from your studies that you found?
My study did not look at other countries, but to the best of my knowledge, based on my understanding of different work cultures around the world, right now Europe seems to be the most vacation friendly. Again, you know, Europe. Of course, there are many different countries in Europe, and each country has its own legislation. But generally speaking, that part of the world, they protect employees' rights to pay time off for vacations. And it's not just about legislation in Europe. They also have very strong union backing when it comes to workplace rights, employees' health and well-being. So all of that means that typically in Europe, employees actually have at least 20 working days on top of paid holidays such as Christmas and New Year's.
Do you enjoy taking vacation yourself, Professor?
Oh, I love going on vacations. That's why I'm in this industry, in tourism and hospitality.
Well, how would you know if you're on vacation, I guess, now I think about it, if you're studying tourism? I'm just kidding. Thank you. It's been very interesting. Dr. Karen Tan, Assistant Professor at the Department of Health and Human Performance, Middle Tennessee State University. Keep the text coming in at 504-260-1870 about vacation. Somebody texted and said, my favorite work schedule is 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 months a year, which is interesting. Somebody else said greedy owners and stockholders won't hire enough people to cover vacation and PTO. And then somebody else said that's why other countries depend on us, I guess, given the American work ethic. However, I don't know if it's always been that way, or if back in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, people would take their full allotment of vacation. And as a kid, I don't think I can. My dad owned a service station. I can't really remember going on vacation as a kid other than with an aunt. When we come back, we're going to talk about this power slap event that's coming to New Orleans. Tim has been telling me about this sport for years now, and it's just amazing. I don't know why somebody would want to do it, but it is interesting to watch. 9:39, 21 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:45, quarter till 10. I've been looking forward to this. Tim Zimmer alerted me to this. How long ago, Tim? 18 months, maybe? 2 years? About 2 or 3 years ago. Frank Lamasella joins us now, president of Power Slap. Tim is enamored with this, and he shows me the highlights, as are a lot of people. Over 17 billion views across all social media outlets. It's coming here to town on Friday night at the Xavier Convocation Center on Xavier's campus. You can get tickets and find out more at powerslap.com. Couple of championship matches. You got Damian DeBell, whose nickname is the Bell against Wes Mina for the heavyweight championship. Then you got Robert Trujillo against Dakota McGregor for the lightweight championship. With that, we welcome in Frank Lemicella. How you doing, Frank?
What's up, Tommy? How are you?
I'm all right. I got to ask, where did the idea come from for this sport?
So about 5-6 years ago, we started watching some of these slap fighting videos on YouTube coming out of Russia and Poland and other places, and they were doing like 300 million views on a YouTube video. So, you know, credit to Dana White. He saw how explosive the content was and said, hey, let's do this the right way, put the power of the UFC machine behind it and see where we go. And, you know, we're up to this is our 14th show, our first one outside of Vegas in the U.S. We've done 3 seasons of a reality show, and, you know, the sport's on fire, the promotion's on fire, we're just getting started.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. The first event outside of Las Vegas in the United States, one in Abu Dhabi and Saudi Arabia. When it comes to the sport itself, for people that are not aware, Frank, describe it, if you would, please, what a match looks like.
Sure. And so the first thing to note is that all these fights are regulated and sanctioned by the state athletic commissions. So we are approved as a combat sport here in Louisiana, which is one of the reasons why we decided to come here at this time. And so the sport is simple. You know, two guys stand across the table. They go slap for slap. It's usually 3 or 5 rounds, 5 rounds for the title fights. You know, there are rules like you can't lift your feet or pivot. You know, you can't, you know, you have to land the slap in a very small target area on your opponent's face, and you can win by knockout or decision. A lot of these fights go, you know, the full 3 rounds, and the judges decide who is the winner.
I got to confess, my headphones came unplugged, so I missed a part of it if you said it. Did you determine this with a coin toss as far as who goes first?
That, you know, the coin toss determines who goes first, but believe it or not, we've done, you know, about 250 matches at this point, and it's right about 50%, meaning whoever wins the coin toss wins 50% of the time. Whoever loses it loses 50% of the time.
So no discernible advantage at all?
No, none.
So if I were to sign up for a power slap competition.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And I win the toss and I slap my opponent and he doesn't go down. Can I quit?
we don't like people who quit after the first
No, I understand that. I'm kidding. But I tell you, after watching it, I think I would. Tell me about people think that it's there is an art to this, a technique to this, a science to this, right? Tell me what some of the key components are, I guess, and then we'll go from there to some of the things you can do wrong. What do you want to do right?
So there's absolutely an art and science to it. And, you know, we hold regular training camps out in Vegas, and you can see how much better the guys are getting, the ones who come to the camps and train and practice, because you have to generate a lot of power and speed, and you have to land in only one spot on your opponent with that power and speed. And if you miss and you foul, you pretty much lose the fight, because you lose a point, and in a 3-round fight, it's really hard to win if you foul. So you got to do all that right. And then and when you take the slap, you got to actually learn how to brace for the slap. You have to train certain muscles in your body. And like I said, these guys who are training, we see a huge discernible you know, benefit from them actually getting out there and training.
So what is it? Because I got to tell you, and I don't mean this sounds terrible to say this, but what you're talking about is physics. And when I saw it, the first thing I thought of is hitting a golf ball, because you got to have the sweet spot of the club on the right spot on the ball, and you have to be going fast, but weight also determines it, right? Have you ever looked into the physics of any of this, Frank?
It's a great comparison. It's a great comparison. Like I said, in slap, there's certain things you can't do. Like, we have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of former MMA or boxers that participate in power slap. And, you know, one of the things they teach you when you're learning, you know, boxing is you always pivot your foot and you generate power that way. Mm-hmm. And in power slap, that's something you can't do.
So yeah, talk about really, that, if you would, about the technique, because you can't, first of all, you can't pivot, like you're saying, like swinging a golf club, and on the other side of it, you can't flinch or tell me about that.
Correct. So when you're striking someone, you can't pivot, you can't step like a baseball pitcher, and you need to use a flat open hand. And the other thing you have to do is you have to call your hand and call your number, meaning, you know, right on three. So you use your right hand and land on the third wind up.
So what you say is, and for people that have not seen this, you're going, you can say one, two, or three, and then you go one, two, and you can't go on two.
Right.
If you say three, you got to go on what number you say, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And it sounds simple, but when the lights are on and 4,000 people are looking at you, people actually do make mistakes there.
And tell me about clubbing and cupping the hand and so forth.
Yeah, so you have to use a flat open hand. You know, we want people landing with the palm of their hand. You can't lead with your wrist bone. Obviously, you can't use a closed fist. You can't use a cupped hand. So flat open hand. And then on the defensive side, you know, like I said, you got to learn how to brace to receive the slap. You can't flinch. If you flinch, meaning if you move out of the way when the slap is coming, your opponent gets to slap you again. So, you know, we advise no flinching because you never really escape what you're trying to escape anyway.
Mm.
And, you know, you go back and forth. We got a lot of tough guys, tough girls. We have incredible champions. Like you said, two title fights this weekend, and we're really pumped to be in New Orleans.
Tell me about the holding the thing behind your back. What is all that about? I don't understand it. The floaty,
yeah,
or whatever it is.
We when we were kind of seeing what other people were doing out there when we first saw the sport. I mean, look, part of that is just to keep a defensive posture consistent across all the guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got guys who are 6'5", 5'6", you know, 400 pounds super heavyweights, 155 pound lightweights. So by having that, you know, the slapstick that they hold behind their back, it makes it consistent across all the fighters, and it also helps you keep your shoulders down, which is one of the rules.
Slapstick, but there's nothing funny about it. When it comes, Frank, to has anything ever happened? Have you ever had an opponent that just at the last second said, no, I don't think so, I'm out?
Yeah, I mean, we you know, we've had that before, actually, in the co-main event. Our lightweight champion, Robert Trujillo, he fought somebody a few years ago, and his opponent kind of bailed out after they gave the first slap and didn't knock him out. It's happened only a couple of times. You know, like I said, we got a lot of tough dudes and girls who want to be up there and earn their keep. But we've seen it once or twice.
Have you ever taken one of these or not?
Definitely not.
I can't imagine. I can't even imagine what that must feel like.
Dana and I like promoting the sport and running the business, but we don't participate.
I don't think I've been slapped in the face since like fourth grade, and she was maybe 85 pounds, and that hurt, so I can't imagine this.
Yeah.
Tell me
yeah.
again about the event and how people can go to it and find tickets, and how can they find yeah. out more about it, Frank?
So you can learn more at powerslap.com, but you can buy tickets on AXS. The event is this Friday at the Xavier Convocation Center. Doors open at 6:45. First fight is at 8:00. And all I would say, is this event is an incredibly fun event. It's unlike anything you've ever seen before live. And if you're in New Orleans this weekend for the fights, you know, you got UFC Dustin Poirier's last fight on Saturday, and then you got Power Slap on Friday. It's the perfect combat sports weekend.
How about how long does the whole thing last, Frank?
Two and a half to 3 hours.
Okay, and tell me real quick about the rounds again. Each person slaps each other three times. That's how it's
yeah.
structured?
You either have three rounds or five rounds, depending on whether it's a non-title or title fight. The other thing we're doing too, Tommy, after the Power Slap event, we're hosting an after party at Caesars New Orleans.
Okay.
It's something we've always done with Power Slap in Vegas. We always have a kind of a gambling fun after party, and
some celebrities, I'm guessing.
Perfect host for that.
Some celebrities,
absolutely.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have 300, you know, celebrities, influencers, content creators in the crowd. They always come through to the after party. So, again, if you're in town, you can come to Power Slap on Friday, Caesars right after it, and then UFC on Saturday.
So powerslap.com. That's what people need to remember. Correct.
Correct.
And Friday night. Thank you. I appreciate your time, Frank. I really do. It's something to see, man.
For having me on.
You bet. Frank Lamasella, president of Power Slap. 9:55. We'll take a break, find out what Newell's got coming up for us when we return on WWL.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.